Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melbourne and broadcast through the Community Radio Network. It's always a pleasure to bring you through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, Rob Greaves here, and once again, it's my great pleasure to bring you a new program in the ongoing series of Listen to Older Voices. This is part one of a two-part program featuring the life and times of 87-year-old John Skriniar. John's story covers his earliest memories of life in Austria after the Germans invaded his country. He was encouraged to join the Hitler Youth, which, as he says, was an easy decision because of the benefits it brought to the family. And we need to remember, like a lot of the world, Austria had been badly affected by the Great Depression. John talks about how bombs destroyed his school, and so his teacher, with 100 pupils, had to conduct classes in a bomb shelter. At war's end, John was 14 years of age, poorly educated, and there was no work for him. There are stories of John visiting a local prisoner of war camp where he swapped rabbits for chocolate with the prisoners. He also shares stories of his work that he eventually gains and how he came to leave for Australia at the age of 24 and of his work on the Snowy Mountain scheme. I'm sitting in the outer Melbourne eastern township of Wooriallik, and I'm in the home of John Skriniar. John, first of all, thank you for inviting me into your home and indeed into your life. Could I start by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
23rd of April, 1931. I was born in Austria, and I'm one of nine.
Nine children?
Yeah.
What do you remember about your early home life?
Well, it wasn't too good before the war started.
Right.
Before Hitler invaded Austria.
It wasn't good before he invaded?
No, it wasn't, because I really don't remember much.
No.
I started school in 1937.
What was your schooling like? What was that like? Did you enjoy it?
We had to go to school, so what joy, I don't know. Yeah. And after 38, Hitler came into Austria. We all had to join the Hitler Youth.
You had no choice.
You had a choice, but you missed out on all the benefits. You couldn't go to camp and all these things. And we got supplied almost everything.
Yes.
Uniforms and all the shoes.
Which for a young boy is it's something they like doing, don't they? Dressing up in uniforms.
It was exciting for him. It was the most exciting thing, you know. Go and after school, we went out training and marching. And every year we were sent to camp.
Yes.
Yeah.
You mentioned life was hard before the Germans invaded your country, and that was because the world was in pretty much of a depression, wasn't it?
Big depression, yeah.
Depression.
But my father always had work. He worked in an iron mine.
Right.
But we were nine kids, you know.
That's tough.
That's tough.
Yes, and a very tough job too. He must have worked hard.
Yeah, he worked hard, yeah.
What was your mother like?
My mother, she was born in Austria, and they couldn't get married because he had no papers. He came from Yugoslavia. He never told us why or how he came over. And after the war broke out, he went back and got his papers and they got married.
Right.
After having nine children.
These days people wouldn't think anything about it, but that was pretty unusual in those days,
wasn't
it?
That was very unusual.
Yes, it was.
But people sort of accepted them.
What do you remember about your home?
Well, it was nine kids. It was a kitchen and two bedrooms.
So it was pretty crowded.
That was crowded. Up and down, you know.
Bunks. Yes.
Yeah.
So I guess as a kid, given that it was coming out of a depression, you didn't have much in the way of toys and personal things.
We didn't have any. We made ourselves.
Right.
Go-karts and bow and arrows, slingshots, and that's all we had.
But at least with nine brothers and sisters, you would never have been lonely.
There was never any loneliness.
Did you sometimes think it would have been nice to have a bit of loneliness, or did you enjoy having all those brothers and sisters?
No, well, we had a lot of fighting and a lot of good things too, you know. We got on good, and all the kids are supposed to fight each other.
Yes.
I can see my two grandchildren.
It must have been hard on your mother.
It was. Well, she was at home, but never went to work or what.
No.
But it was hard on her, you know.
To feed that number of children.
Feed us, you know. I started school in 1937, yeah. And the first wave of bombers went over, Allied bombers, they destroyed our school.
Oh, gosh. Were you frightened?
Of course we were in the beginning, but then we got used to it. It was a daily occurrence, you know.
Yes.
They came over and sometimes they didn't drop it here, they dropped it somewhere else, and that was it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what happened then if there was no school? Where did you do your school?
We had to go to air raid shelters.
Right.
Yeah. And there was only one teacher for the whole school.
Because most of the teachers would have been called up to fight in the war, wouldn't they?
They were in the army, you see.
Of course, of course.
Yes. We had one woman teacher, her name was Sheila Sturm. She was one of the best. But how could she teach? We had about 100 children, you know,
or
more.
Oh, gosh, that many.
What could she teach us?
That's right. And she wouldn't have had books and things like that either, would she? Nothing.
Not many, no.
No.
Yeah.
So do you think you learnt very much from her? No, but not because
my
of her.
My education was very limited.
Right.
Because when the war ended, I was 14.
Yes.
And after that, there was no school for 2-3 years in Austria. There was no school, schooling, there was nobody to teach. And our teacher, what we had, she put the younger kids together.
Right.
Not we were 14, now you go look for
work.
You
look after yourself now.
You look after yourself, and she teach them for practically nothing.
Yes.
No, and there was no work here.
No. So what did you do?
Just walking around and go out and steal some food.
Yeah, because there was no choice.
The farmer planted the potatoes and we went after him and dug it out. Yeah.
Was there much devastation in your township? Heavily bombed?
Oh, it's not really.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
Across from our street there was a big prisoner of war camp.
Oh, okay.
From the flying personnel. Pilots and whatever on the airplane. And they had an agreement with England and with all the others that they don't have to work. They get supplied from the Red Cross, chocolate, biscuits, and you name it. You know.
And so the bombers would have kept away from the camp.
They kept away from that. Yeah, and they knew it was there. And
right. Was that a place of fascination for you, this prison?
When I was a kid, yeah.
Yes.
Of course.
Could you get very close to it, or were you kept right away?
No, we could. We took them out looking for mushrooms.
Right.
The prisoners, they wouldn't escape. Yeah. They went out with us, and I was breeding rabbits.
Right.
And we exchanged it for chocolate, gave them the rabbits, and they gave us chocolate.
Right.
They didn't have no fresh meat or fresh vegetables. They got all the tin supplied from the Red Cross.
Right.
So they were after vegetables and meat, you know.
How could you communicate? Did you have were you able to speak English?
The guards were there. Some of them spoke English, you know. And they were almost free, you know. They could almost walk out the gate, but they wouldn't because they had to go to life.
Yes, yes, yeah. To do that would put themselves back into a harder place.
Yeah.
Yes. So it almost sounds like you are able to make friends with the prisoners. Not quite.
Because of the language, you know.
Because the language made it harder,
There were a couple of them that learned German, you know, and they could speak a few words with hands and legs. Like when I came here.
So when did you get your first job?
I was 16 and a half.
Right.
I got a job on the road, working on the road.
Yeah. Did that make you feel good, getting a job?
Of course it made me feel good. I earned my own money.
Yes.
I couldn't learn a trade because...
Who was to teach you?
There was none,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Most jobs you could get was in the building because they were rebuilding the country.
Of course, Did you, were you allowed to keep that money or did you have to give it to mum and dad?
Some of it.
Some of it, of course.
Yeah, it's still younger.
Yes. How many brothers and sisters were younger than you?
I was Tony, Hilly, Charlie, I mean, for five.
Five. So most of them, yes. Yeah. You were almost in... Were you in the middle or were you the oldest?
In the, no, I was in the middle.
Oh, you were in the middle.
It's Tony, Hilly, Charlie, and then me.
Right.
Yeah.
You've got a job now, so you're feeling, you know, a little bit better about life.
When I was young, yeah, of course, I felt I could buy some clothes. And I started to smoke. I smoked one cigarette, I think, and I gave it up again.
Oh, very wise man.
And, of course, I felt good. First payday, I go, wow, what's... You got some money.
Yes.
Yeah, go out and buy yourself something.
By the time you had that job and were earning money, were there more things to be able to buy? Were food back in the shop and clothes?
Yeah, there was when I was 6 and a half. It slowly started with the food and clothes. And you could buy, you still had the dinks, the coupons, you know.
Yes, yes.
But you could buy something if you had a job.
Yes.
And my father never... He never had a job for 3 years because the mine didn't open.
Yep, of course.
Yeah. Then he got a job back and life sort of went back to normal.
Yes, yeah. As much as it could.
But yeah.
Yes.
We were all out to look for jobs and working, the girls and working farmers and the building industry mostly.
Yes. Roughly how long did you stay in that road job before you found another one?
It only lasted from spring to winter.
Right.
Winter, the clothes couldn't work.
Of course, because of the weather.
Yeah, the weather, yeah.
So you were unemployed again.
Unemployed after that.
That must have been harder than the first time you were unemployed because you've suddenly, you learnt what it was like to have money and then you didn't again.
Then they got nothing.
You got nothing again.
There was no unemployment benefit then.
Of course not.
You only came in later.
So what did you do? Because now you're a young man, aren't you? You're not a boy anymore.
Stay at home.
Just stayed at home?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all we could do.
So what happened, where did the second job come from?
The second job was in a hydroelectric project they were building, like the Snowy Mountain.
Right.
And that I stayed there till I came out here at the start of 24. Had a job there.
And that is a labourer building?
Oh, just as a labourer,
Yes. Did you enjoy that work?
I had nothing
you
else.
You had no choice?
No choice,
So, first of all, how old were you when you left your home and came to Australia?
24.
You were 24 years of age.
Yeah. That was the thing. We finished the job in where I was working. We walked down the employment office to look for something else. There was the big poster in the window. Australia wants you. Australia, it's 20,000 kilometers away.
Did you know anything about Australia?
I don't see, I heard about it, Australia. I don't even have the money, the bus fare, how can you go to Australia? And it said, free medical, free hospital, 40 hours a week. And all that rubbish, you know.
But it sounded like the land of golden opportunity.
Milk and honey, what do you call it?
Yes, yes. So did
I read that the bloke came over, he said, you interested? He said, go away. where would they get the money to go to Australia? No, he said, we pay you the fare.
Oh, now you got interested.
I said, you're choking or something? He said, no. Here, fill this in, he said. I filled the form in and he said, you hear from us? And he said, wherever I have to go, I haven't got the money. Because she thinks the embassy was in Vienna. They were living in Klagenfurt, but they were 300 kilometers away.
Right.
Oh, we sent you a train ticket. And three or four days later, I still didn't believe it, Later came Berg, come to Vienna.
What did your parents think of this? Were they happy?
Well, they didn't like it, but I was all for it, you know. Then nobody could stop me.
Well, at 24, yes, 24, you wanted to find your own life.
And we went to Vienna and got an interview and he said, the next room, medical x-ray, and then stripped down like in the army, now.
Yeah.
And doctor looked at us. Oh, he said, you got 2 hands, 2 feet. You're right. He put the stamp on. Yeah, but, you hear from us. And 4 weeks later, I was on the ship then.
Gosh.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, a program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their lives.
What an adventure.
Good God, it was an adventure at all.
Do you remember
that? There's another thing. We had to sign a 2-year contract with the Snowy Mountain Authority.
Right.
I had no clue what Snowy Mountain Authority was.
It didn't matter though, did it?
And then we had the government or the authority was granting us £200. We had to pay back £10 a month. Oh, I said, that's all right. They said you got earn good money. When we got here to Melbourne, we came out off the ship and we got a packet of tobacco.
What did you think of Melbourne when you first saw it?
Oh, well, I didn't see anything. The ship into the train. That's all.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah.
And it was at night. No, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, okay.
We were half asleep.
Yeah,
we partied all night.
Yes.
And we got a packet of tobacco and £2.10. That was the unemployment benefit that day.
But that was a reasonable amount of money then. I mean,
it must have been, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Yes.
And they gave us the tobacco, but never gave us the paper to go to the So he said, here's the train going to Bonegilla. And we came there. They never knew nothing about a contract we signed. And they said, you've got to go cane cutting to Queensland.
Cane cutting?
Yeah.
But I thought you were going to the Snowy Mountains.
Yeah, they were there,
so. Oh, okay.
And I said, there's a few German speaking things. He said, don't go cane cutting, there are a lot of snakes up there. Yeah.
Oh, that must have pleased you.
Yeah. And, I said, they showed the immigration officer was there, the contract. He said, what are you doing here? Well, they sent me, I don't know. And then there was a couple of more of them, they had a contract with us. Oh, well, they kept us a few days in Bonegilla, and then they got a bus and took us to Cooma.
Right.
We got to Cooma, the Snowy Mountain, they said the first stage of the project was finished. Then they said, we got no work for you. I said, what are you talking about? I said, you made us sign a contract here and that we have a job. Oh, he said, we can get your job with the contractor, with the American Kaiser Wilson Barini.
Right.
He said, we can get your job with them. And, well, as long as it's a job, I didn't care either. Yeah. We got there, and then we filled in the paper. He said, sign this. What? You got to work 6 days and sometimes 7 days. I said, what did it say for you?
40 hours a week.
He said, he took the paper. He said, that's not what the thing is written on. Oh, well, I got a job anyway. Work 6 days, doesn't matter, I was 7. And we went up to camp. And I was lucky. My next neighbor was an Australian.
Right.
It was Freddie Mitchell. He became a good friend after. And he was teaching me English and I got
good
correspondent papers from Canberra, from the immigration office. We were learning their English, you know. And then I had to pay 10 pounds a month back. And they said, come on, down the post office, help me. He said, what are you doing that for? Well, they lent us the money. He said, bullshit. An immigration officer, he came back, there were 19 nationalities up there.
Yes,
know?
Oh yes.
Came up once a month. And he went down to see them, and he said that 10 pound bombies come out here for nothing.
That's right.
Yeah. And I paid 10 pounds already for the first month, you know, and then they explained it to him, and he said, don't worry about it. And they sent me the 10 pound back.
Oh, okay, that's a nice gift.
Not to worry about it, yeah.
So, okay, on one hand, you had to work a lot longer hours than you expected, but you didn't have to pay the money back.
I didn't have to pay the money back.
So it's more money in your pocket.
In my pocket, yeah.
Yes. What was the work like for you there?
Well, it was hard. It was not easy, but we were used to it.
Yes. Yeah. And you'd had some experience, hadn't you?
I had some experience. I had electric in the tunnels. And
yes, yes.
And I worked there for off and on for 4 years. Then I went back to Austria.
Why did that happen? Why did you go back to Austria?
My brother came after me, but 6 or 7 months after me.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to go back. I wanted to go back too, you know.
Were you happy?
I was here 4 years already.
Did you miss your family? I'm just wondering that's why you want to go back.
I've been back
just
to see them, you know.
Yes.
And when we got back, there wasn't much. It was different. There was plenty of work. But the life is different in Austria than it was here, you know. Here it was more open, you know.
You'd got used to the Australian life.
The Australian life, you know. Over in Austria, wherever you go, in the railway station, there was police, identification police, and that never happened here.
No.
Yeah. And I was there, stayed there for 5 months, I think, to come back here.
Did you have to pay your own way back this time?
Oh, yeah, I had to pay my own way, yes. There and back.
Was the second trip back to Australia better?
No, I came back by plane.
By plane? Oh, that wasn't.
I went over with the ship.
Yeah, what was the ship journey like? Was that pleasant or was that difficult?
They were charging us £200, but it was worth only about 10.
I was like, that wasn't.
Yeah. First of all, everybody was seasick.
Oh, you
never forget that.
Oh, no, I wouldn't forget that.
And I never was seasick. And sometimes there was only 2 or 3 of us in the dining room, you know. And it was all right. Made a few friends, and I went out with one girl in Port Said. Look, one of them Arabs came along and asked me if I wanted to sell the girl. She was a bit fat. Oh, God, didn't she scream? I said, yes, yes. Didn't she scream? And, well, you can't do that again. I wasn't a joker.
Of course you were.
Yeah, it was funny, yeah.
So the second trip back on the plane was a lot better, more comfortable and quicker, of course.
It was quicker, yeah.
Yes.
Took us 3 days to me then.
Did you come back to Melbourne?
No, Sydney.
Sydney. Yeah. Why did you choose Sydney?
I wanted to go back to the snow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the scheme was still running then, was it?
Oh, yeah. The event finished in 60-something.
Because it was a huge project, wasn't it? It was one of our biggest. Project.
One of the biggest and one of its only went on, they quoted 900 and some million pounds. And they done it 30 million cheaper. It was big in the Bible.
Whoa, that doesn't happen these days.
It doesn't happen very often. No, because the Yank built it. The Americans.
Yeah. Well, actually, the Australians built it. The Americans were managing it, weren't they? But it was Australian, well, international.
International. We had American bosses. That's yes. all, no yes. American workers.
Yes.
Only bosses.
So did you get a job back there again?
Yeah, yes, right away. Now, they told us not, you shouldn't stay longer than 6 months.
Why? Because the isolation?
It's the isolation. So when you go, and you were good, your job, you still get a job back. And when I come back from holiday, I got a job back straight away.
So when did you eventually leave the snowy scheme completely?
How old I come to that.
Ah, okay. Jumping ahead, go ahead.
And I went back to the snowy. And one of the Americans, oh, I was there for a year or something. One of the, often down in Auburn Bay City on holiday. And one of the American bosses came, he said, we got a big job in South Africa. You want to come? I said, South Africa? Yeah, he said, we need some blokes there. I said, they're bringing the black fellas there. Oh, yeah, they're no good.
Join John and I next week as he talks about his early life in Australia, his work on the Snowy Mountain Hydro Scheme, and how he nearly went to South Africa. We learn how he meets his wife, Linda, and how he was blown up in a mining explosion. All this and a lot more next week with John Scrinya on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Community Radio Network.